Welcome to First Contact Stories of the Call Center. I'm your host, Christian Montez, where we dive into the lives that connect us all, one call at a time, revealing the stories behind the leaders' transformative journeys in the contact center world. All right. Hey, everyone. Welcome to First Contact Stories of the Call Center, where we're going to be peeling back the layers of the contact center industry to reveal the personal stories and insights of the most influential leaders. Now, look, for those of you who don't know, I'm your host, Christian Montes. And today we're going to be diving into the fusion of technology and human emotion, a realm where our guest, Josh Feast, the CEO and founder of Cogito, is a true pioneer. Josh, welcome to the show. Excited to have you.
Thanks, Christian. It's wonderful to be here.
You know, look, the theme of the show is always first starting off with understanding how you got into the industry. And I know you have a really interesting background. So I'd love to kind of start at the beginning and see, where did your career start then? How did you get into what you're doing today?
Well, thanks for asking. So I started in technology, and one of my sort of first roles out of undergrad was supporting an organization that manages all of New Zealand's social workers. And one of the things I saw when I was working there was that social workers have a very challenging job. They manage lots of difficult conversations. And at least at the time, they weren't very well managed. And one of the challenges is that the systems that were available to help support people in these sort of intensive human services roles were sort of dated, and they were sort of based on sort of manufacturing technologies and manufacturing techniques rather than really measuring and promoting the value of human connection. And so then when I was lucky enough sort of a few years later to come and study at MIT, I encountered some research, some wonderful research, which looked at how you can use a computer to automatically measure human behavior and understand psychological state and understand how people interact and how to make interactions better. And I thought, woohoo, if we could just take that science, make it into a technology, and then bring it to the human services, human interaction realm, we could make a real difference. And so that's been the sort of the path of Cogito. And we started off with healthcare applications, and then we've expanded now to service financial services, technology, still healthcare, insurance. And we're in the US, we're offshore, we're all over the place now. but it's still the same theme. Like, how do you support teams whose job it is to interact with other humans, and particularly at a large scale?
You know, it's so interesting how we go and look at solutions for these challenges, right? You see social work and you see that there's that disconnect of that human connection. And the interesting part is that we went to technology to help solve some of those.
That's exactly right. Well spotted, yes.
And then this sense of coldness with technology, right? The sense of disconnect from the human connection. So can you kind of talk a little bit when you go into the thought of creating a company, the concept of a business versus just, you know, coming up with something, working for a company? Why didn't you see that people were already doing this? And I get when you were at MIT, you kind of saw some of those aha moments, but did you search to see if people were doing this? What made you pivot to going, let's make a company, let's be entrepreneurs? Because that's a big step. How did you kind of have that piece of your journey?
Yeah, I think it's a good question. I think there's always the entrepreneurs, you know, do they fall into it? Do they do it deliberately? And the answer is both. I was deliberate. Like, I was interested in starting things, and I wanted to contribute. I thought my skills would contribute by helping take something that may have stayed on the shelf longer or not happened and make it appear in the world in a way that would solve a problem that I had seen. So I was definitely motivated by that. And you know, there were lots of challenges. Like, yeah, Cogito's, we're, you know, probably 15, 16 years old from when we started. Although we've been in the contact center space for less than that, because we started, you know, doing research and things. And there were a lot of like really interesting things that we were trying to solve. So there's the issue of how do you manage these challenging conversations, or organizations that do challenging conversations. There's also the issue of distress and how you manage distress. Back at the time when we started, there were lots of soldiers coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan with psychological distress issues. So we were funded by DARPA to create technology to help solve that. And we worked with the VA and all sorts of other things to work in that area. So I guess the sort of long and short of it is, like, it's something you do because you want to see a change in the world, but it's also something you do because it feels like personally meaningful. I mean, I think that's really the heart of really entrepreneurship at the end of the day.
Yeah, well, it's great to see that the passion of trying to solve a real world problem, and also that problem being something that in many ways is challenging to see when it's not being done properly, right? Because it does have some very huge ramifications. And so from that, do you have any stories of a success of when you saw some of those moments where you were dealing in those types of scenarios where you said, we have something here. It's not just theoretical anymore. This is tangible when we're seeing results and we're getting that feeling that you are describing, which is you can see successfully helping people in a way that's beneficial, right?
Yeah, no, it's a wonderful thing. And, you know, the path from like basic science through to like running product is an interesting one because you've got these different milestones. Like the first milestones are we got an experiment and the experiment worked. And then it's we got a basic technology working and it still works, right? And then you kind of get this sort of increasing section where you're already interacting with users and interacting with the application and you know, what you want to do with it. And then you start getting user feedback. And that's the most gratifying, right? That's the best feeling when you really feel like you're helping like actual humans do their work, do this very difficult work or very challenging work, or it can be sometimes. You know, I think, you know, one of the huge successes early on actually was technical success. So we were working in Boston and working with our technology in a research setting at the time of the Boston Marathon bombing, which was obviously a huge, big deal. And one of the things we found, we happened to have technology deployed just because we happened to have a study running when the Boston Marathon bombing happened. And and we discovered that created a population level trauma. Like everybody, it was horrible for everybody. It was particularly horrible for people who had a prior history of distress because it kind of brought back feelings of, and we could track all that in the data. We could see how the distress could change. We'd be like, wow, we have something. We have a real monitor here. There's something that could really monitor humans at a large scale for things that are really important and really hard to get that data otherwise. So you sort of translate that to where we are now, like the kind of direct application of that to the large scale contact center is, you know, we have now models that can continuously measure customer experience in true real time that you can run on any sort of call type, or continuously measure customer employee experience, same thing on the other side of the thing, continuously in real time across massive populations. So that's sort of how it then affects the sort of the commercial world. But it all sort of starts in these almost like research setting insights. So that's, I think, maybe one example I can give you.
Yeah, no, it's great to see that, you know, it's not just theoretical, right? There's not this black box behind the scenes where people are going like, is it working? Is it really working? And it's interesting how you've made this pivot, right, at starting into social work, going into some of these other things with the veterans and now, you know, you're really dominant also in the call center space. And we talk about difficult conversations and you have all these frontline heroes that are having to constantly be in conversations that maybe they're not fully prepared for. Maybe they're not in the right emotional state. Maybe the tech on the front end has sent you somebody who now is upset more than they should be because maybe wasn't prepared the best. And now you have this representative or agent or whatever role they're playing. It's now having to deal with this intense situation. And so I know one of the major brands, hopefully I can say it, that you work with is Wyndham Hotels, right? And they're in the hospitality space. They're also, you know, in timeshares and a variety of other things and things of that nature. And I can just imagine the things that go well and don't go well when people want to have vacations and have time off. So can you kind of walk us through from maybe that viewpoint, whether it's theirs or another similar story from the contact center side of it, the human connection of those difficult conversations, how was the technology, you know, the game changer in this space for that interaction? Any examples of what's happening in that space?
Well, absolutely. And, you know, and your question, I'll say you're absolutely correct about the need to support. Like one of the things that we have, Cogito has, is we have lots of insights because we have this technology. Like one of the things that you might be interested in is if you, and we know this because we have all the measures, if an agent has a bad call, they have a bad experience, a challenging experience. This is just, you know, this is like human nature. Their subsequent interactions with the next customers will be affected, will be detrimentally affected. So that the important is really so critical to support the agent. And the other thing that's really critical and is that, you know, there is a trend for lots of different reasons towards agents taking more and more complex calls. Part of it is that one of that's an industry trend where, you know, there's a sort of a drive to have generalist groups of agents rather than specialist groups of agents where they're taking lots of different types and then have the technology support them to handle those types. That's like one thing. The other one is the rise of self-service because self-service, you know, in principle, will take the edge off some of the simpler interactions. So that means the average interaction that's going to an agent is just more complex. So this is like, this becomes a real challenge. So then you sort of say, well, how does the technology support this, right? So one is it's going to support the management structure around the agent, which is, you can come back to that original concept, right? So you can measure experience, you can measure employee experience, you can support people when they're in challenging times, you can intervene in real time, or intervene, you know, just after calls, you can do all that type of thing. You know, you have coaching, you have an objective measurement rather than sort of subjective. I didn't think you did well. Well, okay, how am I going to reply to that, right? Like, you know, you can, you know, really, so that's going to be much more support of that atmosphere within which the agents operate. The other thing is real-time guidance. And real-time guidance, which is really while you're speaking guidance, is something that Cogito was one of the, you know, very, very early pioneers. And one of the reasons we're one of the early pioneers is that we were able to do this before kind of the recent advances in speech recognition, which, you know, we think of that in the last, you know, few years, you can do real-time speech recognition. When we got going on real-time guidance, you couldn't really do that. So we were able to get real-time guidance going, you know, quite a long time before others have got into the space. And one of the things about real-time guidance is it can, done well, it does two fundamental things. First, it will improve workflow, right? And that's kind of the most, the use case that most people know about. And that use case is I can help agents with what they should be saying. I can help, you know, maybe create some guardrails that might be important from a compliance perspective. I can, you know, identify some different parts of the workflow that they need to be aware of to make sure they move through the call efficiently and effectively. That's one piece. But the other thing that real-time guidance can do, and few companies can do this, I'm pleased to say that Cogito is one of the ones that can support it, is improve relationship. And relationship is critical because when you have these interactions, they're going to be very important. They're ever more important. They're going to be moments of truth of a customer. So you want them to go well. And customers, the way they work, and I'm happy to go into more details on this, they pick up on very subtle things about how they're being spoken to. And if they feel they're not being spoken to in the right way, they're going to immediately react negatively. They may not say that, but they will react negatively because they're coming in a high-stress situation themselves. And so it's just really critical. And an agent's doing, what, 30, 40 calls a day sometimes? So it's not easy for them, right? So how do you kind of scale the system where your agents are supported to be continuously churning, which takes the stress off them, as well as like move efficiently through the workflow? And that's the challenge of real-time guidance.
Yeah, I mean, I think you nailed it that it's not always what you say, it's how it's said. And if someone's having a bad moment, that bad moment, just like we talk about negative energy, you know, that negative energy is contagious. You're having a bad day, you're around other people, you can start rubbing that off on them. And I totally can see how that, if you don't nip that in that moment or create awareness, you know, people are like, hey, you're having a bad day. And you go, why are you asking? It's like, because you look and act and are sounding having a bad day. And so we're not always self-aware that that's happening. And sometimes we are, and we think we're masking it well. We're doing a really poor job. And to manage that at scale is really difficult. And so to kind of pivot a little bit, Josh, I know that, you know, Cogito has kind of looked at merging these concepts of emotional AI and conversation AI in kind of a unique way. Could you kind of explain how those technologies come together to really do that enhancement that should be doing in the call center interaction?
Absolutely. So maybe I'll just sort of specify two different things. There's the outcomes you want to improve, which in Cogito's cases, we want to improve both relationship and workflow, right? That's the sort of outcome focus. And then there's the technology focus. And and typically what's often referred to as conversation AI is basically the set of technologies that operate on the words that we use. Right? That's kind of a simple way to think about what that is. And then there's what we call emotion AI, which tends to operate on what sometimes we call non-lexical, non-verbal, the stuff other than the words, right? Basically. And that's what that piece is, right? And one of the things that some, and there are certainly, you know, the set of, I guess, organizations that can operate effectively on both is very limited. And one of the reasons is you often may have some, you may not have the access to the stream. So like when voice comes in, you, in order to be able to access emotion AI, you have to be able to have the technology to operate on raw voice, not just on transcribed voice. And then you have to be able to bring these different signals together in true real time, which specifically in the case of emotion AI means, you know, milliseconds. And you have to be able to bring these technologies and these inferences together in the moment to make, you know, an effective prompt or bring an effective insight. So part of this trick about doing that is being able to access the different types of underlying signals. It's being able to combine it, and particularly in combine it at super scale at extremely high speeds. That's one piece. And the other one is, we can think of it like the easiest way to think about it is like, as in sort of with a logic component. In practice, it's often done statistically, but with a logic component, you want to be able to say, let's take a simple one. I would like to guide the agent that this is a great moment to do an upsell. Let's just say that's what we want to guide somebody on, right? So ideally, you want to take into account not just where somebody is in the workflow, but also like your sense of whether they're having a good experience right now. Because if they're not having a good experience right now, that's maybe not the best moment, right? So that's what I mean by this kind of logic of, we call it context aware. Basically, you want context aware. And that's what makes these this guidance seem magical, is this concept of context awareness. But what it really is the fact that you're combining these different types of signals.
Running a contact center these days takes a great deal of courage and fortitude. Nobel Biz would like to salute the contact center community for not giving up and working hard to drive their businesses down the road to success. As the promise keepers of the industry, our goal was to provide one of the most versatile and cost-efficient omnichannel solutions on the market. Nobel Biz OmniPlus is a cloud contact center software that gives instant access to a full range selection of channels, from voice calls, two-way SMS, email, WhatsApp, Twitter, Telegram, among others. Our solution offers complete control over the externalities by switching from an on-premise technology to a cloud-based solution in just a matter of hours. Get integrated compliance support, advanced reporting, seamless agent and supervisor dashboards, and many more performance-enhancing capabilities, all in just one product. Nobel Biz OmniPlus, the future-proof solution for scaling contact center operations. Learn more about Nobel Biz OmniPlus at www.nobelbiz.com.
Yeah, it's incredible to think of how technology has really changed, right? From where we were surprised that you could make a phone call, right? That you could fly in an airplane. And now everyone's kind of bothered that we can't, you know, have flying cars. You know,
there's this expectations shift. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, well, why not? Why haven't you come up with that? And it's great to see how some of these technologies are at a point in which we're able to sit here and go, we can look at it beyond just the transcription, just the words themselves. And that really translates to the other piece you said, is how in the moment can you get to that part where how I'm saying something is actually going to make this a lot better or a lot worse, and to do so in a timely manner. Because after the fact's great, fine. You could always coach someone afterwards. You can always engage them. And that's important. But in that moment, what could you do to optimize that opportunity? And it could be a very important conversation. So I know that really you've worked across all kinds of industries. When you look at all these different industries, what are the differences that you've noticed in application when you're talking about low emotion to high emotion situations? What have you seen that kind of differentiates, if anything, those types of use cases?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. And we do service, again, a very wide range of industries. From clinical interactions, right? Like, you know, clinical interactions, you know, right through to, very large scale, service interactions or now sales interactions. I think maybe I'd say what's common. So what's the same? So what's the same is that everybody wants a sort of systematic way to measure. They want to be able to, things that, like experience or employee experience, sort of regardless of call type. They want to be able to do that because they need a unifying sort of way to know what's going on, right? And they also want configurability. And the reason they want configurability is because there's lots of different workflows and lots of different types and lots of different contexts. And agents can, as we said before, can take lots of different types of calls. Right. And the way that you speak to somebody from one pool of customers or one pool of customers may be different as well. So that I think is true. And then I think what's maybe different often is the way that the customers talk about things, the language they use. So, for example, you know, in a healthcare setting, we might talk about using mindful compassion, right? That's a pretty technical term. So in that setting, that, you know, there's a lot of people that have been trained, they're kind of going to get that. You know, in another setting, we might have a little cue that has a heart and says empathy cue, right? It's just a little bit different, you know, using different languages to kind of, it's a similar point, right? You're trying to get the same point. Now's a moment to connect with a customer, like an emotional level. But the sort of the way that you do that changes. The other thing that I think is a really significant impact in the organizations that we serve is a lot of our organizations we serve are highly regulated. We tend to work with very large organizations at very large scale. And they have to make sure that they're doing what they need to do from a business perspective and doing it absolutely in the right way. Like that's like a huge, huge focus, right? So people have to create guardrails to make sure that things are going to be good. Everything has to comply with the regulations, everything. But everyone also always wants to do the right thing. So, you know, an example might be there might be different products and services that you have to be very careful about discussing with maybe a vulnerable person, right? It's a very, you know, it's a classic situation that you can find yourself in, and you have to be really careful that that's handled well. So that in those specific cases can be quite industry dependent.
Yeah, and I can imagine making sure from a compliance perspective where these things are really important. And obviously each industry has their own lingo, their own way they approach certain topics. But I think the end result, right, is still at this point, right, it's all humans talking to humans, right? So how do you still have that human element, which is, I think, really important. And earlier we were talking about, you know, the employee experience, you know, how the agent feels, how the agent engages is really important. So you really have this emphasis, right, on EX, right, the employee experience. And why is that so important? I know we kind of touched about it earlier, but to kind of hit home for what Cogito does and what the tech does, why is it, though, that there's such an emphasis on the employee experience in this?
Yeah, well, it's an excellent point and a good question. So you know, it's sort of an old adage, you know, if you want good customer conversations, make sure the agents are happy, right? Like, and it really does work, but there's science behind it. So I mentioned earlier, like the hard data is if the agent has a poor experience on a call, which may mean that they had a particularly challenging customer, that could be one reason. The subsequent series of calls, the customer experience will be adversely affected. Right? And that's like an axiom at this point. We have so much data on this that it's about as you know, robust a result as it's possible to get. The other one is that there's psychology behind it. So when somebody becomes distressed or frustrated, they get what's called compassion fatigue. And compassion fatigue is basically when you're using up the parts of your brain that you use for empathy, right? So you just overloaded them, right? Not your fault. You just overloaded them. And what happens when you're in a state of compassion fatigue is you actually can't detect the social signals. And it's the detection of the social signals that allows you to be charming, right? And so if you're in that state, there's no way you're going to come, despite your absolute best intentions, you're going to miss a cue and then somebody's going to get frustrated with you and then it's going to spiral, right? So we're trying to avoid that situation. The way I think about it is the easiest metaphor is lane departure warnings in a car, right? I'm driving along with a car and I don't need it. I'm a great driver, except when I'm not, right? Except when my kids are screaming or something happens. And then I'm really happy that I've got this to kind of keep me on the track. And so that's sort of what we mean by kind of, and if we can do that, we stay in the lane and then the call goes well and then the next call goes well and then everybody gets through the day and then all the metrics are better.
Yeah, I love that analogy because, I mean, you know, as much as many people want to strive to do better, to maybe even understand that perfection is unrealistic, but there's always room for improvement. The moment that you get caught flat-footed where you're not being the right way, you weren't perfect, that moment for you may be a moment in time, but in that call, it could be the first time that person's ever engaged your brands. It could be the first time that customer has ever had the opportunity to have a touch point in their journey. And so that one moment is enough. And so that knowing that humans are imperfect, right? But we still want that human connection. I think that analogy is great, is that sometimes you just need to have that peace that allows you to continue to know, like, hey, guess what? You have that area of opportunity because for this other person, it may be their one and only chance for that first impression of de-escalation or to delight somebody, whatever that may be, which is great. The other piece of it, of course, is we all know in the call center world that retention of staff and churn is a challenge for some verticals in the call center space. And if you have employees that perform better, they're hitting their goals, they're happier, they're probably going to stay long.
Yeah, that's right.
The cost to train people, onboard people, bring in people is real. And so I think there's probably something that you see in that as well, is that there is probably some correlation that you've been able to find between the people that are performing better and happier are probably going to stay around.
Well, I mean, it's not a huge surprise that there's a high correlation between the employee experience measures and the retention. Right? It's not a huge, but I think the other context is, and I, you know, is obviously the remote work context, which is obviously huge in the industry as well. And it's not just you know, people being supported, but being supported when everybody's isolated and in different, you know, different locations, some part of the time. So it just heightens the need for kind of supportive technologies.
Yeah, no, completely agree with that. And so when we look at, you know, earlier we talked about that sometimes technology is looked at as something that's cold, right? It doesn't really have that human connection, and that you're using technology to improve the human connection. How do you actually then advocate for maintaining that human touch when the world is really becoming a lot more automated? And are there strategies that you recommend to find that balance between keeping that human connection and not losing it?
No, it's important. Maybe I'll start with the agent and then start with the organization, go to the organization after that. With respect to the agent, one of the things we've seen, it's just interesting, like this is relatively recent, I would say, yes, within the last year in particular, but we've seen a real hunger from the agents to want to engage with AI solutions. And you might go, really? And one of the reasons is when you think about it from the perspective of an agent, this is an opportunity to become fluent and to really future-proof themselves for, you know, the future changes and, you know, sort of the arrival of the technology. So that's, you know, before people they like the technologies, they would use it, but now it's much more, they're leaning in much, much more because they're like, okay, I have to get my hands around this. I have to understand what this is. I have to be able to say that I can work in tandem with an AI solution to ensure my sort of, you know, future career prospects. So that's a positive for these types of technologies. And that relates to that's answering the question of how do you get somebody to adopt a human in the loop technology like what Cogito is. Then there's the question of the human touch in general versus full automation, which is in some ways a question for our clients, the management organizations, and what they choose to do. The thing I would say on that is that you go back for as long as you can look at the data, and the number of contact center agents that are required pretty much goes up with GDP. It kind of goes up with GDP. And we've been doing self-service for a very long time. I mean, we've been doing self-service since there were mail order catalogs, right? And the way I think about it, I have healthcare experience. It's like bending the curve on healthcare costs. Self-service is fantastic. We should continue to do it. But because of growth, because the world gets more complex, people can afford it. People also want service. They want self-service options, and they want service options. And the demand for both just increases. So really, when you think about self-service, what it's truly doing is kind of bending the curve on the demand for service rather than really bringing it down. That's what all the data would show. And so I think that the question, and this is always a challenge for our clients, like the business on the business side, is, you know, how aggressive are you going to be in terms of assuming that you can get through things by increasing self-service and therefore bringing down your service? Like, how aggressive should you be, right? And I would say you should be very, very careful. I would say you should be very, very careful because often that need to provide service is going to grow with your organization. And it is hard to do self-service to the extent that it's going to require less sort of human resource than your growth rate. It's very hard.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's so interesting how you're talking about that dynamic of self-service being just as important as the service, because we're in a world where the consumer is demanding, I want to interact the way in which I want to interact, when and how I want to interact. And I think where we're still getting to today, right, is the balance of not only the mix, but how well you execute on each thing. Because if you execute poorly on self-service, all you're doing is increasing the amount of people that are going to have these more highly emotional conversations when they go to the service side. Because now they're having to say, oh, hold on, I can't just engage you. I have to diffuse the situation. I have to listen and be empathetic and add in all the things that allows that conversation now that is probably going to be longer. It's probably going to have more emotion towards it. And that agent or representative now has to be better trained, has to be better prepared, has to have, you know, real-time access to information and recommendations for them to be more successful. So you're right that there's that blend. There's also how do companies then have the customer in mind, right? When we talk about the agent experience, well, one thing to help out an agent is make sure your self-service doesn't suck.
Right.
Because if it does, you're going to have a certain amount of your agents that are going to go, yeah. I'm really talking to a lot of people that hate our IVR, that hate our self-service, that hate our whatever it is, our chat bot or whatever thing that's out there. So I think there's also going to be some importance in that area. So when we kind of shift from that and we look at that role of diversity and inclusion really playing out and shaping the future of call center environments, how do you actually see that rolling out and happen?
So diversity and inclusion, I think, has been important for a while. I mean, in some ways, the context in a workforce is itself a relatively diverse workforce compared to other workforces, which is, I think, a huge strength of that workforce and something that needs to be celebrated. The types of technologies that that we've been talking about here provide something very, very important, which is objectivity. Right. So here's the classic example. Right. Here's the classic example. You know, Christian, I don't think you're a very good listener. You're like, Josh, I think you're a great listener. Like, I'm a great listener. What are you talking about? So where do we go from here in this conversation? Not very far, right? Because but the question is can you get some objective measure? And then what if, like, in my statement that I think you're not a good listener, I'm bringing some sort of bias to that? Is it because of some reason, right? So that's the challenge. So you need to have objective measurement. And you have to have objective measurement for soft skills. That's the trick, right? And Kodito brings that, right? Kodito brings that. So that is like, so it creates a fair environment, right? And that, I believe, is absolutely critical. Otherwise, you just leave yourself open to, well, Josh is biased when he said that in some way, right? So I think that's like one of the first kind of important thing. The second thing relates to diversity and inclusion with respect to your customer population, right? And making sure that you're uniform and compliant in everything that you do in terms of interacting with your customers. So that's about the guardrails on the agent, and who may not know like what the regulations are or what it is that they're supposed to be doing. And the thing about real-time guidance, and I think real-time guidance with respect to both soft skills and workflow, is that you have an assurance that a greater proportion of your interactions will be successful from a fairness perspective. Whereas if you're relying entirely on sort of a post-call coaching mode, you really have no assurance, right? You know, we're just having a conversation about the calls that you had in the last, you know, month or period. And I say, well, you should do better than that. You go, yes, Josh, I should do better than that. And then what control do I have about what's going to happen, right? And so those are, I think, the fundamental things. It's real time, it's every call, and it's fair.
A famous African proverb says that if you want to go fast, go alone. But if you want to go far, go together. At Nobel Biz, we have made it our mission to travel far and wide with our partners and clients. As a complete telecom services provider with over 20 years of experience in the industry, Nobel Biz offers the only voice carrier network designed with the sole purpose of serving call centers around the world. This contact center dedicated carrier network provides crystal clear voice traffic, up-to-date compliance tools, intelligent routing, and highly secure data protocols combined with 99.9% uptime and easy setup. Our goal for 2022 is to become the ultimate partner and provider for the contact center industry by placing service quality at the top of our priority list. To top it off, at Nobel Biz, we have the most competitive cost per minute model in the industry. Need proof? Reach out to us and learn more about the Nobel Biz Voice Carrier Network at www.nobelbiz.com.
You know, I think of all the things that we've talked about from a technology perspective and from the agent side of it and being able to leverage those to work in tandem in a really important way. I think another piece to be important to get your perspective on, Josh, is really around leadership, right? You know, with good leadership versus poor leadership, that could be a significant impact on how the business moves forward and how it treats its staff. So when you think of leadership in the terms of the call center industry, what are the kind of qualities that you think are really essential to be navigating this current landscape?
Yeah. So it's not easy to be a contact center leader at the best of times. It's not easy to be a contact center leader now. And one of the things is because there's so much change, right? Like customer operations is one of the biggest industries, but now it's one of the biggest industries in technology. So which means lots of stuff is being thrown at you. So I think there's sort of three fundamental things. So the first is the relationship between the leader and the team. Right. And that trust between the leader of the team and that constant communication is really, really critical. Like I think if you're a leader and you're, you know, the team is a little bit distant from you and you don't engage frequently, then you're gonna find it difficult to do the next two things. Right. And the next two things are you have to be bold. Because right now you have to be bold, right? Because it's actually, in today's world, it's really easy to stop and say, you know what? I'm going to see how things go. I'm going to retrench. I'm going to watch lots of stuff moving. I don't want to make a decision that might not turn out to be perfect, you know, in hindsight, looking into the future or suboptimal in some, you know, some way. But unfortunately, the organization that you work for wants to win in the market, right? So they need you to stretch and say, no, no, look, we're going to place bets. We're going to make change happen, right? We're going to make change happen. We're going to take advantage of what's possible. And we're going to take advantage of it now rather than looking and waiting. Because that's what the organization needs, right? They want to be a leader. So you have to be a leader for the organization to be a leader. Right? And then the last one, which relates really to those two points, being bold and having the relationship, is you have to be a change maker. And that's one of the hardest, I think, things is because you know, introducing AI, but AI is just one technology. There's lots of other stuff, right, out there that you could be doing. It's a big change, right? It's a big change, and you have to be the one to lead it. Like, you know, some of the best engagements that we do, you know, our senior leaders, they'll create videos to show how important this is going to be, how it maps to the company's strategic priorities. You know, they hold town halls. They're like, That's what's required, right? To succeed, right? Because the technology is, I mean, it's a tool, right? And it's the use of the tool that gets the value. And it's the leader that drives the use of the tool.
I love that idea that it's the tool. How you use the tool will dictate your outcome, right?
Oh, now, no,
there's cases where there's people that use tools in a funky way and they get away with it. But there's a reason why certain tools are produced certain ways. And when you learn to optimize those tools, you can get great outcomes from it. Now, with those great outcomes, right, there's also the flip side to it. When they're not used in the best way, maybe in an ethical way, or there's some bias that's always going to be there because they're made by people. But how do you then address, when we're talking about integrating these AI solutions into customer experience, those concerns about the bias that could be in the solutions or the ethical use of AI? So now we've said, well, we're using these technologies to remove the human bias of just when, you know, you have the inclusionist and an opportunity there. But when you build the products, there's still inherently a potential for bias or unethical uses of the AI. How do you How do you see that being addressed?
Yeah, so it's a critical question in AI as a general, right? So Cogito takes two approaches. One is sort of how we think about the application of the technology, and one is sort of the application of technical approaches. So there are a range of technical approaches that you can use to demonstrate the fairness of your models, right? And a lot of it comes down to how you manage the data that goes into training those models, right? We take great care. But there's also statistical techniques you can do to adjust for the impact of training data. So if you have a slower representation of data from a certain group, you can make certain model changes to kind of account for that. Cogito, I think, was the first organization to publish on gender bias in emotion AI. One of the first organizations to really show how you can ensure, because in voice, vocal cords are different, right? Male and female, it's just different, right? And so if you don't think about that, you're going to end up with a bias model. And so we developed some original techniques to deal with that. So I put that on the technical side. The other fundamental, and I think this really, human interactions are complex, like go in lots of different ways. Sometimes we underestimate how complex they are. We think, oh, it's a simple workflow. We're just going to check a balance or something. It's never like that, right? There's much more to it. Somebody's whole life is wrapped up in this, right? There's nothing simple about them. And so you've got to be careful not to overestimate the capabilities of AI, right? Like I like to say, okay, let's say we have a model and that model is 99% accurate. That's a technical triumph, but it's still wrong 1 in 100 times. And how many calls do we manage? Millions, right? So that's the nature of these things, right? So how do we deal with it as Cogito? And the answer is human in the loop, right? So we're conservative about what AI can do is we position ourselves as an assistant to a human. And we do this across the thing. So we're always allowing for the fact that the AI may not understand a piece of context that it's supposed to understand. It's not perfect in every case. So it's really viewed as a partnership, always a partnership between the human and the AI, and the human rules, right? The human wins, the human always decides, but the AI assists, right? And that's, I think, that's sort of a mental model. And that's one of the reasons we followed into this, one of these application areas is just this kind of recognition that, at the end of the day, there's statistics behind all this stuff, and statistics isn't always perfect, right? So I think those are the two most useful answers.
Yeah, well, it's good to see that there's a balance between the technical approach and that there's still this human aspect of it, because in the end, I think you're right that the human aspect of it's going to be a really important sanity check. Now, let's kind of shift a little bit over to generative AI, right? That's really big. A lot of people are talking about it and a lot has been said. But when it comes to how we see generative AI influencing the call center, we talk about it being the fact that it's going to create this more personalized experience. What is your view on that, and how do you see generative AI actually impacting this space?
Yes, I'm going to give a bit of a nuanced view on this, if that's okay, because I do have fundamental thoughts, right? The innovation of generative AI, there are some technical improvements that drove the excitement of generative AI, but in my opinion, the biggest one was just that it trained on the internet. So the biggest triumph of generative AI is a human triumph. We all built the internet, right? And wrote a bunch of content, right? And then this is a way to kind of train on it. So you have this, very big models. The problem is that when you apply to a contact center scenario, it's not clear that the information that's on the internet helps you very much. What matters is your organization's information and the information about the customer, right? So I think that what we sort of end up with, right, is that we end up taking the technology innovations, and there are genuine technology innovations, and we apply it to a similar type of data set that we've been working with for a long time, right? And so what we end up with is wonderful techniques for content summarization, which I think is a very powerful use case in this, right? You're not maybe accessing the internet data to do it, right? You're accessing your own data to do it, but you're creating this content summarization, which can be powerful because it helps you track what's going on. But it can also be powerful because it supports the sort of the broad trend of having agents taking multiple types of interactions. And so the need for sort of a little bit heavier guidance. And as you say, maybe a more personalized guidance in terms of how to enhance into how to navigate them, because the agents are less specialized, right? But the call types is still just as complex. So I think that summarization really helps. And then, you know, I am less familiar with, but I'm willing to believe in the idea that chatbots will improve, right? I happen to be a bit of a chatbot skeptic as a personal thing, but I can see that improving. But these are kind of the technical improvements, I think, rather than the kind of trading on the internet.
Yeah, I think a lot to unpack there. We could probably have our own just on that alone.
Somewhat of a big topic. Yeah,
exactly. So I guess to just kind of quickly pivot to where that fits into the Kajito world, you know, are you seeing on the horizon any things that what's next for Kajito? What are the emerging technologies that you're able to kind of say, hey, here's what's coming down the road that could be a game changer for the industry over the next few years? Anything that you're seeing coming down the road?
Yeah, I from what we see, I think so we released our sort of large scale employee experience monitoring last year, that went GA last year. And so I think we're starting to see the impact and we are to continuously understand both customer experience and employee experience and what that means. So that's sort of one where the technology is now available, it's now been deployed at large scale, and the impact is going to be felt, right, for the customers that are able to leverage. I think that's one kind of big thing. I think that the other one, which we've referred to as I think we've been lucky to be a bit of a pioneer in the space, but this context of context-aware guidance, where you're understanding both what's going on at a relational level and what's going on at a workflow level, that's got a very long way to run. There's a lot in there that's going to make this whole thing a lot more magical. The other thing that I think is really interesting is I've got two more, which is we started focusing on care, and then we expanded from care to focus on service across a lot of industries. One of the things that we've seen work really well in the last year plus has been service, but then service to sales, and then sales. And we've got successes now across all those cases, which is, I think, a little unusual because typically you have a technology that does one or the other, right? And so I think that's going to be a trend where the platforms, capabilities of the AI are generalizing enough now that you can have a vendor that can cover these sort of different types of interactions. And that becomes very powerful, right? Because then you can have interactions in terms of the guidance between the sales teams and the sales to service and the service teams, and you can kind of really kind of drive outcomes. So that's it. And then the last one, and then I'm done, is I think the start of the delivery of these technologies to a larger set of customers. So when Kajito started, and up until relatively recently, we really only set up to service large organizations. Just economically for us, it was very hard for us to do other than anything other than that. But we've got the technologies, the scalability of the technologies underlying the cases that it now is becoming cost effective for us to serve more modest size organizations, right? And so the technology suddenly becomes much more broadly applicable to more and more organizations that they can start to benefit from these things that, started off extremely cutting edge and, still a cutting edge, but they've now kind of, got to the point where they're accessible at a reasonable price point. For a lot more organizations. I think that's exciting.
No, I think it is important when technology can be broadly adopted. When it's too niche, it ends up being nice to have, but it doesn't become applicable to enough people's real world situations. And so, one of the things I think that's going to be great for the end of this conversation, right, is now kind of shifting a little bit away from the business a little bit. The technology, but kind of going to the personal side. And I'd love to kind of understand when you've reflected on your journey, what's kind of that piece of advice that you wish you would have received when you were starting your career? Anything come to mind?
You know, it's funny. That's a good question. Yeah, I feel like I got a lot of advice along the way, and I didn't heed a lot of it. Right. So I think one I did heed, which I got from my father, actually, starting was listen and filter, which is you just listen because you're going to get a lot of advice, and you're going to filter it and pick the things that are going to make sense to you in the moment, and then understand the decisions you make are going to be based on what you know at the time. And if they turn out not completely perfect with hindsight, you're just going to move on, right? It is what it is, right? And you can't, you got to keep going. But I tell you that the piece of advice that's fairly topical that I really love that I got in the last year, which I kind of wish I'd heard, a time before. And I'll get it from Taylor Swift. and it was this wonderful article. She was talking about some challenges she'd had in her career. And her big thing was, that she learned was keep creating. Just keep creating. And I think for if you're an operator or an entrepreneur, stuff happens, the whirlwind comes and goes. There's lots of people around you that want this, that, or the other thing and also help you, right? But you just got to kind of get remembering at the end of the day, like entrepreneurship, running businesses, creating products is a creative act. And if you're doing it, you're probably a creative person, probably, right? And so you just got to keep that part of you going. Just always. And that'll ensure that you're always happy and fulfilled.
That's great that you have a kind of a balance of things that have all influenced you. And like you said, some of it's noise, some of it is sound advice.
Right.
Some you'll put your own twist on it. But I think in the end, there's something that you're going to have to be passionate about. And if you're going to drive with that, don't let that flame, go out.
That's right.
And also have it be important for you. So, one thing I kind of want to end on is, everything isn't always rainbows and ponies and, sunshine and everything, right? There's times where we've had challenges, right? We've had these obstacles or these failures in life. Can you share an obstacle or a failure that you faced with that was a really good learning opportunity for you?
Yeah. I'll go back to one of the big pivots Cogito made. This was a number of years ago. As I mentioned earlier, one of our first applications was really very care-oriented and healthcare-oriented. And one of the things that we developed, which we were unbelievably proud of, was the ability to listen to somebody on a phone call and basically make a prediction about whether they're experiencing clinical depression. And the way we did it, by the way, was there's a pattern of voice. It's like a monotonous, whispery voice, which if you have a number of other things going on, like chronic disease or like some other risk factors is a pretty good risk signal. It's an official symptom of the condition. And so we were so proud of this. So technical triumph, right? And we had a number of customers that were also very excited. They wanted to deploy it and pilot it. And the concept was if you could detect depression in somebody that maybe otherwise had say chronic disease and you could help them, then you could make a huge difference to the health outcome. So like there was a big prize, right? Right from a market perspective and application perspective. But one of the things we discovered was that, the world wasn't ready. They just weren't ready for it. And it's still arguable that they are because we focused on other things. There's sort of like a technology has like a window of social acceptability, right? Which is just natural. And you kind of have to kind of try it and push it. And so what we discovered is that we had a lot of customers that would pilot. We couldn't get to large scale production. So that felt like a use case failure. We put a lot of effort into developing and validating and running studies and all that sort of thing. So, but then of course the positive of the story is always, there's always the seed of success in all these things, right? And engaging and trying to help, in this case, nurses detect depression on the phone, we realized that we could help nurses be more charming on the phone and improve their phone side manner. Right. And that flip, which is just the flip of the coin, same technology flipping to the other side, allowed us to create the kind of the new spark of what then became the Cogito that sort of exists today and works across all sorts of different industries. So, the pivot and the failure often has the seeds of success built into it.
Yeah, no, that's great to hear. And I think it's a true story for anybody who has gone through something that didn't work out the way they thought it was. That it didn't mean that what they wanted to do couldn't be possible. It just meant they found one way it wasn't going to work.
Right. So, that's well said. Yeah.
Now,
very innocent. That's very innocent.
Yeah. the other part. So look, this has been a great conversation. It's been very enlightening. Love to have heard all the stories of your origin story and everything that is going on at Cogito. I appreciate you coming on. I know there's going to be people that want to get a hold of you, Josh, specifically, or Cogito. How would they go about doing that?
Yeah, I'm absolutely delighted. So you can contact us. Our website is cogitocorp.com, cogitocorp.com. And there's a whole bunch of forms and also things that you can get in. We'd love to hear from you.
Awesome. Well, again, thanks so much for joining. And look, to our listeners, thank you for joining us today on this journey. We learned a lot about AI, about empathy and connections. We look forward to you staying tuned to our next episode. So we'll be exploring another fascinating topic then in the call center world. Take care.
Thank you for joining me in this episode. If you're loving the content, make sure to hit that subscribe button on your YouTube channel for exclusive clips, webinars, workshops, and bonus materials. And if you're an Apple iTunes listener, we greatly appreciate a 5-star rating and review to help spread the word. On our YouTube page, you can also leave us feedback, comments, and suggest future guests that you'd like to hear from. For even more valuable insights and information on the call center world, visit nobelbiz.com and access our on-demand webinars. I'm Christian Montes, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of First Contact Podcast. Stay with us for the next exciting chapter.